Welcome to the Perry Ritchie Group Podcast, bringing our communities the latest in wealth strategies, ideas, and updates on the capital market to keep you informed and confident. Listen in on conversations with our advisors and industry leaders around the country who are changing the landscape of their businesses. This is the Perry Ritchie Group Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to a conversation edition of the Perry Ritchie Group Podcast. Today is April 5th, 2024. I'm Brooke Cassidy, financial planner at the Perry Ritchie Group, and today I'm joined by Kristen Elanius. She's the Director of Education and Advice from Your Money Line. Kristen holds the accredited financial counselor designation and a master's from Kansas State University in financial planning and financial therapy, among so many other accolades. She has been guiding individuals and businesses to make positive change in their money life for nearly a decade now through many media sources like radio shows, podcasts, broadcasts, blogs, you name the source, she's educating individuals on how to move the needle on their financial health. I'm personally coining her an expert on student loans. She shares a deep love for the study of behavioral finance and uses that in her day-to-day practice. Kristen is one of my favorite people to have been able to work alongside because of her passion for research and knowledge and unwavering commitment to helping individuals. With that in mind, I reached out to Kristen to be a guest on the podcast for Financial Literacy Month to discuss financial wellness, some common mishaps individuals make with money, and some key takeaways for listeners to put in place to increase their financial security.
I'm personally coining her an expert on student loans. Whenever I have a question that I feel like is just too far reaching for me, I'm like, all right, Kristen, help me out. And we both love behavioral finance. So it's been a lot of fun just to know one another and be able to talk about what we see and how can we help clients and individuals that are in our sphere. So whenever it is April, Financial Literacy Month, and I'm thinking, how can we continue to guide our audience on ideas like financial literacy, my first thought was Kristen would be great to have on the show. So welcome, Kristen.
Brooke, what an intro. I'm so flattered. That was fabulous. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you for being a great person to intro. I mean, that's one piece of it, isn't it?
I mean, I guess that's true. But when somebody stacks up your resume right in front of you, it's like, it's very exciting, but also feels kind of humbling. I don't know. I loved it. Thank you.
Well, you're so welcome. So for those that are not familiar, talk about your money line and what you all are doing and what is your role at your money line?
Yeah, if we kind of open this can of worms, it just goes everywhere. So we'll try and keep this succinct. Your Money Line is a business to business financial wellness solution. And what that means is that our company, YML, we go to businesses and then they bring on financial wellness as part of whether they call it their pillars of wellness or as part of their comprehensive benefits package. And then what happens is a team of financial experts, that's actually my role. I lead that team of financial experts. We help their employees navigate the challenges of their personal financial lives that prevent them from showing up to work as the best version of themselves, because we can't turn our personal lives off when we get to work. So those personal finance things that are plaguing their employees, we're here to help them with that. We have an online platform that employees get to use that has a bunch of resources available. My team puts all those resources together, and then we have a helpline that people can call in and talk to real people, and their employer pays for their access, so their employees get unlimited access to that service, and it's a really wonderful and unique experience to be a part of.
Absolutely, because I can only imagine like how many different financial situations you're helping with, and having to just also have a level of empathy that you may not have to have in a general conversation. Like if I think about day-to-day client conversations and like, you know, how different every person's financial life is, you're helping someone in such an intimate area of their life.
Yeah, we definitely. And what's really wonderful is that in my role, we get to work really closely with HR benefits leaders, and they often are put in this position from a business perspective where if an employee doesn't know where to go, they go to HR because HR is going to have the answer. And sure. So we get to take those personal finance concerns away from HR and benefits leaders. And that's mm-hmm. probably one of my favorite parts is to say, you don't have to be the expert about your company's 401k. You have to know the contact information. You have to know who can participate, but you don't have to try and educate people on whether the Roth or the traditional is mm-hmm. the better approach. Let mm-hmm. us take that weight from you. And getting to see that partnership, that fostering between financial experts and HR leaders has probably, I didn't anticipate that, but it's probably been yeah. one of the most fun things.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a relief for employees too, because they're like, well, does my HR really know? Or the HR person is probably like, should I even be answering that? Because I feel like that's what we hear a lot whenever we're talking to HR individuals for like retirement plans that we manage. They're like, yeah, I probably shouldn't even be getting this question. And you're like, and we're like, yeah, you probably shouldn't be.
Probably not.
Yeah. Because yeah. it's not just the retirement plan, right? I mean, that spills into budgeting and that spills into yeah. debt. So with that idea, what would you say financial wellness, which I think is a new term in yeah. the last like 5 to 7 years, what is that encompass to you?
Brooke, I thought about this question for far too long before today's session because people talk about, I talk about financial wellness all the time, but rarely does someone say like, what is it? Like, what does mm-hmm. it mean to you? And, mm-hmm. you know, I came to this place. I'm like letting it roll around in my head, And I came to this place of if someone is truly financially well, they've achieved financial wellness, they have the privilege and the ability to not think about their personal finances or the decisions or the circumstances that are affected by their personal financial decisions with a high degree of frequency. To me, mm-hmm. that's someone who's financially well, who can truly just like, because they've earned the right to do so, can just like back burner their personal finances. To me, that's being financially well.
I felt like the highest level, right? Like I think oh, yeah. there might be a spectrum of financial wellness, and certainly it's going to look different in different stages of your life. But if we think about financial wellness, it's truly like, think about it as your health too, right? Someone that's from a health perspective, very well, like, you know, the occasional flu isn't probably going to kick them as hard as, you know, someone that maybe sure. isn't as well. So think about that and like the idea of someone who has a cash flow crunch, or, you know, that's going to affect people differently based on their level of financial wellness.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that. And I think there are these two definitions or concepts that I really like to balance when I'm thinking about financial wellness, because you're exactly right. It's, you could also be really well in different aspects of your financial life. You could be doing really well from an investment management perspective or from an insurance perspective, but do you really have a handle on what your cash flow looks like? Or do you, you know, if we think through like the traditional pillars of someone's comprehensive financial plan, is your tax strategy really the most effective? So when I think about financial wellness, I think about the marrying of two things. The first is, are you financially stable? And do you also have financial confidence? Are you confident in that stability? But also the other side of that is, are you financially literate? And that's a really loaded term, and it usually has to come with lots of explanation, because to say someone is or isn't literate sounds way more loaded than it should be coming across as. But I think it's mm-hmm. both of those things.
Yeah, and I think the level of financial literacy that we have just broadly as a society is mm-hmm. lower than I would love it to be as an educator and just being in the profession. Like, that is one area where I'm like, we really need to funnel more resources into this, because as your literacy increases, naturally your wellness can increase, right? How you yeah. feel about it, how confident you are, because you have the knowledge. It's not this giant question mark sitting in front of you of like, am I doing this right? Should I know more about this area? It just can all come together. And the worry goes away, which I think is a big piece of that wellness. It's like, if you're stressing about your finances all the time, any area of them, that could be estate planning, retirement, cash flow, budgeting, like whatever it may be, that's going to lower how you're feeling about finances and then naturally trickle into other areas of your life.
Oh, 100%. And that's part of how the company that I work for started to begin with was like, people have all of, there's just so much noise when it comes to our lives, and our financial life impacts so many other areas of our life. And it's like, I have a turnover issue, or I have employees who are taking a lot of time off, or they seem really distracted at work. And it's like, how many of those factors are impacted by the fact that we lack collective financial literacy and subsequently financial wellness?
Absolutely. So how can we measure? This is one that I think that you and I will have a very interesting conversation on. How do we measure financial wellness? How do you think, let me restate that, not how you and I measure it. How do people tend to measure it?
Oh, Brooke, people love to measure financial wellness by metrics that we've collectively decided mean more than they do, really.
I can agree with that.
We come up with these... And it's just because we try, I think this is a heuristics thing actually, but we try to put logic and we try to understand things that maybe we don't always understand or that aren't rooted in logic that we should be applying to our situations. Like, for example, really arbitrary numbers around emergency savings is something that I think that we use as collective measurements that if I really dig in when I'm working with someone, I'm like, where did we come up with this number? Like, oh, well, my emergency savings account has $10,000. I'm like, so when we crossed into the fifth digit, that was like considered good. Like, what does $10,000 mean for your life? Is that 6 months savings? Is it 3 months? Is it less than that? Like that, we love to use, I love using numbers, right? And quantifying things, but they have to be applicable to our life.
Yeah. Which becomes so different for each person. I think what happens is like, we have this blanket statement of, you know what, you'll be in a good position for retirement when you have $1 million in your accounts. And that may be true for some people, but that is so, it's such a variation. Also, you could absolutely measure from an investment standpoint, but what if those investments cause you quite a bit of internal turmoil? Like, how do I talk about my family about this? You know, like how, like whenever it comes to that, it's like, well, is that actually you being measuring your financial wellness, or is it your financial wealth? Or, you know, it's just so many different areas. I think another one that I think may be more geared towards younger individuals, I'll say that with quotation marks, is the credit score.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like every time the television is near me, there's like a credit score commercial.
It
kind of drives me nuts a little bit because like don't get me wrong, like it is super important to have a credit score, but also it shouldn't be that that's the only thing you're measuring your financial wealth with or wellness
with. Yeah. You know, in my work, Brooke, I find a lot of the time that that is, so something I talk about a lot, let me back up, in my work is that most of us, what we know about money, unless you've sought out formal education on personal finance, most of what we know about money is caught and not taught. It's what we observed.
I love that.
It's real. I stole that from one of my employees, by the way. She shout out to Stacey. So most of what we know, that's something we say on my team all the time, because the way we grew up shapes a lot of the things that we think about money, for better or worse. And Brooke, what I find in my work is this drive to have a good credit score or a great credit score often is rooted in maybe a lack of financial stability growing up, or in a house that placed a lot of pressure on borrowing and debt. And you're exactly right. We have to have good credit. Like in the world we live in, like, do you want to buy a house? Do you want to like make a reasonable, do you want to finance a reasonable car? Like we just, it's so hard to escape it. And there certainly are people that do, but for most of us, you have to have a good score. But that overemphasis, I feel like, is often rooted in a lack of financial knowledge and financial self-efficacy that stems from most of the time the way we were raised.
Absolutely. It's so, in my financial counseling course, like I'll teach, and I know you know this because you're an ASC, it's the overt and covert money scripts. It's like, what have I picked up from something that I read, that I heard, that of some source of like status, versus what did I just observe from action? Like, I just observed my parents do this, and it absolutely will fuel so much. And some of it will be to your benefit. Some of it will absolutely be to your detriment. And so let's talk about a couple of just things that happen that are maybe some mishaps with finances. And this could be, you know, run the gambit, right? Retirement, cash flow, whatever it may be, but some common things that you see. And I'll kind of start with the one that I think can apply to a lot of those different financial planning areas. And it's that I'll do it later mentality. It's this idea that there's no urgency around it. And we see this in retirement. We see this in creating a budget. We see this in getting life insurance potentially. Just all of these conversations that we know are so important because we're in the finance industry. But some people are just like, you know what? I'll kick that can down the road.
Yeah, that I'll do it later mentality, I could not have more empathy for. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, to some degree, it's not our fault, but we also just have to know that we can't back burner things for too long. Like, even if you just look at the difference in two income households from a previous generation to now, right? I think that number has like doubled or something to that effect. It went from like 30% to 60% of households are dual income now. And so when you just think about like the household responsibilities that sometimes were owned by one person that now collectively have to be owned on top of two usually full-time income earners, Brooke, there's so much that just becomes back burner because it's not the demand of today. We have so much demand on our time. And what I find is that so many things in our personal personal financial lives can technically be backburnered because today they don't pose a threat. It's not the school calling about my child's, you know, grades that they have today. It's not the bank telling me my mortgage payment is due today. It's the fact that when I signed up for my retirement plan at work, I didn't maybe fully understand what I was doing. And I just captured the match and I let that go for years because maybe I didn't check in with someone. And as a result, there was no consequence for not going back in and seeing if that number actually made sense for me because I was making the contributions. I was doing what I was supposed to do. And it's that lack of, this is something that has to be fixed today, right now, that allows us to backburner these items for way too long.
Absolutely. And which circles back to, I didn't know I was doing anything wrong. That person probably was like, man, I'm really doing myself a service. And they are. I'm not going to minimize that. But also without the literacy of knowing exactly what needs to be done for retirement and knowing what goes into that decision, you know, they don't know what that's going to amount to. Whenever we take into account what our returns are expected to be, what our, you know, asset allocation is, all of those things, what our need for that asset may be later on. So it's just like that lack of knowing, which you can't necessarily, you know, put that on the person because, you know, you have to pick that up from somewhere, or someone needs to present it to you at some point. So let's talk about the, this one is particularly interesting, the fact that, you know, I'm just not good at money. So this could be something that I hear quite often when I first meet with clients. It's like, we're just not good with math, so I'm not good with money.
Oh, that one's so hard because, Brooke, I'm bad at math.
I don't like, believe that.
I don't have it on my desk here to show you. I know we're on a podcast, but to show you the like worn out buttons on my financial planning calculator. No, but like, to say I'm not good at it, I think often comes from a lack of, in my experience, which is obviously anecdotal, is this lack of sometimes exposure, which is not anybody's fault. But like, if we had an opportunity to dig in a little bit more, would we find that we're good at this? Or is it something that we're maybe a subject that we're too afraid to broach right now?
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also this like, you almost are creating a burden or a hurdle for yourself. Like you are saying like, I can't do this, so I don't have to do this. Whenever really, if you were just like, okay, let me think of a time whenever there was something that I'd never done before, or I felt like I wasn't good at, but then I got good at it. And so like, we can start to reframe, we can kind of visualize ourselves getting through it. And then, you know, gathering those resources, reaching out for that help, and you can absolutely move and build on your financial wellness and, you know, the next steps of what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've kind of offered up my two. What would you think is a common mishap that you're seeing?
So one I would say for sure is I don't feel like I spend a lot of money. So like I must be doing okay. And yeah, that lack of awareness sometimes gets us in a lot of trouble, because I find that when we kind of push that and say, okay, well then let's review how much are we spending? How much are we saving? If we are not looking at our spending with consistency, and I am guilty of this as much as the next person, if I let my budget go for a little bit too long and then I look, I'm like, I spent how much at the grocery store this month? I'm like, I've got to readjust my plan, because I can't be trusted to let this budget item go for too long. And so that lack of checking in, people are, I would say 90% of the time when we then run the numbers, there's at least one, if not two or three categories where people come to me and say, I had no idea. And the last thing I'll say on this is there's a huge difference between being able to objectively afford the spending that you're doing and being okay with the amount that you're spending. Can you afford the amount of money you spend at the grocery store or on dining out or on entertainment or on your kids' travel sports team? Like, whatever the amount is, just because you can objectively afford it doesn't mean that if I put that number in front of you, you're comfortable with that level of spending.
Yeah, there's the awareness of it that might have a shock effect, right? It's like, okay, we're still making the ends meet and we're still doing all of the things that we're supposed to be doing by our financial plan. But then if you like sit back, it's like, well, is that aligned with my values? Like, do I actually want to be spending that much? Like, that could be a real, like, I don't know, a very enlightening moment for sure. And then there's this idea of if we're not spending, then naturally we're saving, right? And not true. You know,
not
like,
true.
If it's in the checking account, it very well may be spent, maybe not right now, but later. So just, you know, kind of setting up that auto allocation. Okay. So we've talked about a couple of things that we see that are maybe, you know, commonly happening amongst individuals just because that financial literacy is not there, or perhaps they haven't been exposed to it. So what else, what is there that we can kind of talk about from your perspective that are key takeaways for an individual to move the needle on their financial wellness?
Yeah. You know, Brooke, I'm thinking about our audience here, and I'm thinking if someone is listening to us right now, they're at least taking a step in the right direction, right? Absolutely. You are exposing yourself to more in the personal finance space. And so I think for our audience today, it's about how do we think and empathize with those who maybe are struggling with exposure to this space? Because if you're not someone who is actively working with a financial planner, if you don't have access to a financial wellness solution at work, if you've never had formal education around personal finance, there are few things more intimidating than stepping into that space for the first time. And once we're on the other side of that, so easy for us to lose empathy for those who haven't broached this space yet.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just the exposure to it. It's like, pat yourself on the back for seeking the knowledge that may make you uncomfortable, or maybe where you know that's not your area of expertise. And like, why, like my like comment to that may be, well, why did you think it should be? Like, you know, if you haven't gone through schooling for this, if you haven't been exposed to it, then naturally you're going to need some level of awareness that, you know, or some level of grace for yourself that, you know, it's okay not to be perfect. It's okay not to have, you know, like, I'm saying that to myself. I don't know. it's okay to step into that uncomfortable space and like, just have that acknowledgement. Absolutely. I think one thing is just like understanding how important it can be organized. I think that's one thing that I think is just really moves the needle, is knowing everything about, and maybe that is a word that will frighten someone, but just, you know, detailing out where are your accounts, where are they mapped at, where, you know, what do I need to be doing, setting those goals and just being very intentional with, you know, it doesn't have to be every day. Maybe it's every quarter, maybe it's every month, just kind of getting through that idea of this is my financial life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's a really great takeaway because time just flies. And before you know it, the will that you drafted has guardianship provisions for your grown kids. Like, yeah. it's just, we get away from the relevant so quickly, and mm-hmm. life changes, people, you know, beneficiaries change. Like, it's just staying on top of that is so important. And Brooke, this might be a little too on the nose, but I call it a dead binder. So like, if mm-hmm. something were to happen to me, what does someone need to do to take over responsibility for my financial life? And mine is not a real binder. It's a drive, a you Google Drive. Yeah. But it doesn't actually like sit on the shelf or anything, but it's a Google Doc that's literally on the first page says like, we've lost Kristen. Now what? You know, like how do we, and that's an accountability thing for me too. It's important to do that for the people that would be impacted financially if something happened to me. And I know we hate collectively having these conversations, but it's also good for me individually to be like, hey, if I'm looking at this, if I'm updating it with a degree of regularity, even if I'm working with a financial professional, they only know the information that I'm providing to them. If something has changed since we've spoken last, if I've had a major life event, gotten married, had a child, whatever it might be since the last time we spoke, I could have some major decisions to be making when it comes to my overall financial plan and my financial health.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if, you know, someone's listening to this, it's a client, we have the client information guide, that personal information where it would like collectively do this for you. That's something that could be in your online portal for your beneficiaries. You can share it however you feel like is going to be helpful for you. It's just having all that information in one place. That way you can free up that space of, in your brain of, I need to be doing that, or someone needs to know that. Because once you know what you need to know about finances, then it naturally becomes like, okay, I'm responsible for this. Who else do I feel like needs to be responsible for this? And I think Absolutely. That is so important. Just, you know, opening up that conversation of your finances with your family, with your kids, whoever it may be, your spouse. I mean, if you guys aren't having collective conversations, like, that could be a whole nother podcast episode between you and I.
It could. Money conversations, Brooke, we don't have enough of them. We just don't.
But I personally love them. I know you do. So I think, you know, is there anything that you feel like we need to touch on before we close this up that would really just hit it home for someone that is curious about their financial wellness?
Yeah, I think that maybe my final point is that don't forget, especially if you're someone listening now, or maybe if you plan to send this to someone, don't be afraid or upset or feel maybe less than or some type of way about if you maybe have been doing something, I'm using air quotes, which is helpful for a podcast, like wrong, but it has still worked out well for you. Make sure to keep an open mind about the need to maybe pivot or adjust your strategy. Because it kind of takes me back to my algebra days, Brooke, where it would be like, you'd get the answer right. Like X is 5. And the teacher's like, okay, but you didn't get to the answer in the best or the most effective way. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes those are the conversations we're having with financial professionals or I'm having as a financial professional. I'm sure you are too. Is someone comes to us and it's like, your financial life's like an 8 out of 10. We're doing a really great job, but maybe there are some habits or some things we've picked up along the way because of that lack of formal education around money, or because we haven't had enough money conversations, or because we haven't been exposed to this space enough, or as much as we maybe would have liked to, that maybe there are some things we need to tweak and change.
Absolutely. Just being open-minded, being able to absorb. And, you know, I think that makes it very important to find someone you truly trust to talk about your finances. Just like that trusted professional that you know has your best interest at heart. That knows, that digs in on the goals that you have, that wants to, you know, develop that relationship so that you know the decisions you're making, you have that full confidence that they're, you know, they are right for you. They're not just an option. They are truly the right option for you.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Kristen.
Thank you for having me.
This has been such a treat. Yes, absolutely. If anyone has questions, feel free to reach out about the client information guide. If you have any questions about financial wellness, our team is more than happy to help you with that. And we will be back next month with another episode. Thank you so much, Kristen.
Thank you.
This podcast is intended for information and educational purposes only. It is not an offer to buy or sell, or a solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any security or instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. The information is considered to be from reliable resources, but its accuracy is not guaranteed. The opinions expressed are those of the show's host and guest and are not necessarily those of Robert W. Baird & Company, Inc. Baird does not offer tax or legal advice. Securities and investment advisory services are offered by Robert W. Baird & Company, Inc., a registered broker, dealer, and investment advisor member, FINRA and SIPC. Robert W. Baird & Company, Incorporated.